again, everybody. Welcome to the Mainland Podcast, episode number 92. I am Michael Citro, and joining me is Tallahassee Dave Rowe. Dave, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing Tallafine.
So I would like to say right up front that we are not responsible for the results on Saturday, and we will take no responsibility for them in what I'm calling the doubleheader of sadness.
It was pretty sad, and we're definitely not responsible in any way. Not saying that we won't take responsibility if we get a win one day. You know, even if we're being honest, we probably won't, but definitely not a doubleheader of sadness.
Yeah, and the reason I call it the doubleheader of sadness, two pretty embarrassing losses. The Pride get their first home loss at the hands of a previously only two-win Houston Dash team, dead last in the NWSL, and then, of course, the 4-0 shellacking at the Chicago Fire by Orlando City, and both Orlando teams presenting their respective leagues with the Player of the Week, as Pauliana gets NWSL Player of the Week, and David Akam, of course, gets MLS Player of the Week, and hopefully now European teams will come and buy David Akam, because I'm pretty freaking tired of that guy.
I'm extremely tired of Akam. He definitely seems to have our number whenever we play those guys. It was like Kai Kamara a couple of years ago. You know, he always seemed to have a good game against us. Well, Akam always seems to have a great game, and like you, I am totally sick of it.
Yeah, I'm not sure that he's a jerk, but I bet he is. I bet he's a jerk.
I always felt Kai was kind of a jerk, so you know, yeah, I'm gonna go with you on that. All right.
Yeah, Kai definitely acts like a jerk. I mean, when he walked across the lion circle at center, the center of the field last year, when he came out onto the pitch, you know, they had the big cloth in the middle of the that covers the center circle with the lion logo on it, and he just walked right across it, and that was definitely intentional and definitely trying to be a jerk on purpose. So yeah, Kai Kamara is a jerk, and I bet Akam is a jerk too. But I don't know that for a fact, so I'm not gonna make the claim that he is. I'm just saying I bet he is.
You would take that bet if you were in Vegas.
Yeah. Actually, I never bet when I'm in Vegas, so I don't know if I would take that bet. Okay, Dave. So let's dive right in to the week's action. I want to call it a little bit. The doubleheader of sadness, of course, started out with the Pride and the Dash, and the Pride started very brightly in that contest, very getting forward a lot and getting chances, and a great header by Marta that was saved off the crossbar that could have put the hosts up 1-0. And then, of course, it was an afternoon game, and they had that water break at 30 minutes. And from that time on, it was, I won't say it was all Houston, because the Dash didn't get forward that many times and didn't get that many great opportunities, but the Pride could do nothing right after that. They couldn't string passes together. It's funny, because I think they actually had a slightly higher passing accuracy than the Dash on the day, but it was certainly noticeable how many passes in the final third went badly wrong, and how many times there were cross, you know, just crossing the field, switch and play, and we're way offline, and it would go out for a throw-in. It was just a day that the Pride lacked a lot of sharpness.
Yeah, and I don't know what they put in the water, but they need to do whoever the water boy is needs to do a better job, okay? Because that seemed to take everything out of us and put it right into the Dash. It's never easy when you've got to play a team, you know, two times in a row. They, of course, we're looking for revenge, you know, from the previous week. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of wasted opportunities for the Pride in that match, especially early on when they did seem to be on the front foot and did seem to be, you know, any second, you know, going to get that goal that would, you know, take them up, you know, put them in lead and allow them to, you know, dominate the game for the rest of the afternoon. But for whatever reason, they just could not seem to finish. You know, of course, on Lloyd's shot on her goal, well, from, you know, outside the box like that, she's one of the probably the best in the world at those long distance shots. you know, it's you love it when she does it for the national team. You hate it when she does it against the Pride. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure. That's one of those, and it's one of the reasons why, like I say, she is one of the best in the world. I mean, there's very little you can do to stop that. I did like the defensive effort at one point, at least with Catley getting that that clearance off the line in front of goal. I think it was 42nd minute when they chipped the ball over Bledsoe. That was a good highlight.
Yeah, and that was Pollyanna. That was the player of the week in the NWSL. And Steph Catley was quick to point out when asked about it in the post game that that was her player she was supposed to be marking. So she felt like she had to get back and prevent that goal because it was her player that was that got in behind and took the shot. So she did well on that one, but obviously Pollyanna was a problem throughout the day, and Andressa was a problem, and obviously Carly Lloyd was a problem on that one particular shot. That was she was just given too much time and room. It wasn't quite what Camilla had done the week before from that kind of distance, but it was still a place where Carly Lloyd's going to score from more often than not if you give her that kind of time and room at the top of the box. The problem was it was in the last minute of first half stoppage time, and that was a very deflating goal to be giving up in that spot, because at that time it was kind of against the run of play. I mean, Houston had started to come into the game a little more after the water break at 30 minutes. So it was only 15 minutes more until halftime, really, when they started back up. And, there wasn't a whole lot of time for Houston to create a lot of chances, but they got that one, certainly. And that was a painful one because, you never want to give up a goal at the death of the half like that, because it just is a huge momentum boost for the other team. And certainly they rode that into the second half. And Orlando Pride, as we said, didn't take their chances. Rachel Hill had a ball fall perfectly for her in the box and shot it right at the keeper. And Camilla had a chance from the top of the box where she got forward and just didn't get anything on her shot, just rolled an easy one for Jane Campbell to scoop up. And of course, the Marta chance, which Campbell just kind of threw a desperation hand up and got a hand on it and knocked it against the bar. And it bounced way up in the air, and Campbell got up and was able to recover before Orlando Pride players, two different Orlando Pride players, could crash the net and put it in. So just a rough day for the Pride. Nobody really seemed to have an answer. Tom Sermonti, Ali Krieger, Steph Catley, nobody really knew why they didn't play well. But, credit the Dash for being very organized, because they've had a very porous defense this year, but they did play very organized on defense and very compact between the three lines. It was very difficult to get to break through and get any kind of chances, especially after that first water break.
Sermonti almost cleared the bench after that, just trying to find any kind of solution, to get back in the game, and it wasn't to be on that day. It was one of those days where it seems no matter what you do, you're not going to find the back of the net, especially when, like you said, a desperation hand up on that Marta shot, and you still don't get anything. So I'm not sure, barring, I don't think it was bad luck, but barring, chances not dropping, I'm not sure what else, they could have done. They didn't play bad, and like you said, the Dash weren't, dominating time of possession or anything like that either. It just kind of fell the way it did.
Yeah, just lack of sharpness on the Pride's part. I mean, just not connecting on the types of passes that they normally do, and even Marta and Camilla didn't connect very well at times. It was just one of those games where you have every now and then, and that's kind of how Tom Sermonti said he was going to look at it. It's like he expects the team to be back where they were the week before. They were coming off a couple of wins, and they obviously were hopeful that that would be another victory to take with them. They're going to play at Sky Blue, which is a place that is very difficult for the away team to win. Sky Blue is a very good team, third place in the NWSL right now. They've got Samantha Kerr, and they're a pretty tough team to play, and it's going to be a battle.
I'm hoping that the loss that maybe shouldn't have been, or the it happens every once in a while, loss, is maybe a bit of a motivator for the Pride as they head up to Sky Blue, and that they can find that find the back of the net for, you know, for every chance that didn't go in this last game. You know, we get some breaks that go our way this time, you know, that header goes in, or that, you know, shot from Camilla goes in. You know, she gets a little bit more on it. So that's my hope for going into that game.
Yeah, I was kind of a little bit surprised that Tom didn't bring Choma Obogugu in, the former Houston Dash player, maybe get some revenge on her ex-teammates. But she was not the option off the bench. Came in with Jamia Fields, Maddie Evans, and Danica Evans to try to generate something in the second half. But all we got was a counterattack goal by Rachel Daly the other direction, and that was a bit unfortunate. It was only seconds before that. Jasmine Spencer was penalized for a foul. It would have been, I think, a pride throw-in at that point. She got called for a foul, which honestly was a very average, normal shoulder-to-shoulder challenge. And the other player actually initiated the contact. So it was kind of hard to figure out why Spencer was called for a foul on that. But instead of a throw-in, it ends up with Houston, and Houston ends up coming down and scoring a goal off of it just a few seconds later. So it's kind of it's hard to say what would have happened on a throw-in. It could have been a turnover, and it still could have been a counterattack goal. But you know, just a little bit of a misfortune there on a call that may have had a little to do with the second goal.
Right, and you know, when you look at that call, I chalk it up to it was just that kind of day for the Pride. That, you know, the shots are going to go against you and the calls are going to go against you.
Yeah. So anyway, they'll try to regroup at Sky Blue, and then they're going to be back in action on Saturday at home. And again, another late afternoon affair as part of a doubleheader with OCB. They're going to be hosting the Chicago Red Stars. So two of the top few teams in NWS, two of the teams above the playoff line up next for the Pride. And the Pride has to play the Chicago Red Stars three times in like the next month or so. So this is a very crucial situation for the Pride, and obviously they're going to want to get Alex Morgan back as soon as possible. We're thinking probably the second game of July would be the about right in terms of the recovery. Mm-hmm. But of course it could be sooner than that, but could be later than that. We'll just have to see, because you know, there's no set time for a hamstring to recover.
No, and like I say, I mean, getting her back as soon as possible, as long as it's the right time. You know, you don't want her to come back too early, aggravate that, you know, the hamstring, and then, you know, we're without her for even longer. I would rather, you know, hold off until, you know, second game, or even the second, you know, or the second half of the second game, if need be, just to, you know, make sure that, you know, she's good to go. It will be important having her back. Like you said, I mean, July is looks like a pretty crazy month for the Pride. So, you know, having her back, and I'm sure the energy she's going to bring, because I know she's going to be excited to be back. And then, you know, we've been talking about it, you know, all year, the, you know, finally getting to see Alex and Marta play together. And now, I mean, honestly, we can put Camilla in there in that little grouping too, and Jasmine. I mean, there's a ton of talent on that team, and there's no reason to think that they can't make a good run of it, you know, especially with, you know, more home games and all that. But July will be interesting.
Yeah, the schedule definitely is favorable for the Pride the second half of the season, so they just have to get back to where they were, and maybe even a little bit above where they were, since they'll have a healthy Alex Morgan in the near future. So got to look out right now for Sam Kerr and Maya Hayes, who have tortured the Pride before for Sky Blue, and also they have Sarah Killian, who is tied with Marta and Megan Rapinoe for the league lead in goals with five. So there's a lot of talent. Raquel Rodriguez, another talented player out of Penn State, second year player, I believe, and you know, just a really solid Sky Blue team that, you know, when you think of the top teams in NWSL, they don't really leap to your mind. You think of Chicago, you think of Seattle and Portland. You think of North Carolina, obviously, because they won the championship last year as the Western New York Flash. But you don't think necessarily about Sky Blue, but they definitely have a solid lineup.
Yeah, and like you said, it's a tough place to play, so you can't overlook them. I do go back to just thinking that, you know, having that loss, you know, coming off that loss, I think that that will be a motivating factor for them, you know, going into that game. I think they're going to want to, you know, prove that that was just one of those weird things that happened, and that the progress and the, you know, the good form that we've been seeing of them of late is the norm, and that was just an outlier. So, you know, I mean, we'll have to see. Like I say, it's a tough place to play, but I feel, I mean, I felt pretty good about the second dash game, but, you know, look what happened. So,
yeah. Well, you never know what can happen. I mean, I think nobody expected the Pride to go to Seattle in the form they were in and get a point, especially after Ashlyn Harris went down. So you never really know what can happen. And so the Pride will be looking to take something from that game Wednesday to bring home for the Chicago match on Saturday. So we'll see what happens with Tom Sermonti's group. And again, a formidable opponent on Saturday with the likes of Julie Johnston Ertz and of course, Kristen Press, and you know, just a really good, solid Chicago Red Stars team. So the other half of the doubleheader of sadness was, of course, Orlando City at the Chicago Fire. And Dave, I don't know about you, but I was really surprised to see a squad that really didn't have that much turnover from the Wednesday night game at Seattle Sounders.
Yeah, I mean, you even talked about it, you know, in the preview last week, where, you know, you mentioned that you expected some lineup changes to try and keep, you know, people fresh, and that didn't happen, and I'm not sure, you know, what Coach Christ was thinking about, but you could tell they were fairly tired and listless. Even Kaká was sloppy with his passes, you know, and of course, you know, he's not necessarily want to do that all the time.
Right. And they took Giles Barnes out, and they took him off early in the Seattle game, but he didn't start the game at Chicago. It was Kaká up top with Carlos Rivas, which was odd. We haven't seen Kaká up top in the 4-4-2 as a striker. Nope. I don't think he was very effective in that role, but it's kind of hard to fault him when no one could get the ball up the field, because it was basically constantly coming at Joe Bendick all game long. The other thing is Matias Perez-Garcia came off early and didn't start as well. Will Johnson was in the lineup. You don't normally see Kaká back-to-back road games, three games in 8 days kind of thing, being in the lineup twice in a row like that. It was a little bit surprising that we didn't see a little more turnover. And the back line, there wasn't much turnover there. The PC came on for Toya, but Scott Sutter got the start again, and Redding and Spector. And it was just, you know, it started off like, you know, a normal game. And then all of a sudden, 3 minutes in, a calm scores on a, you know, just kind of out of nowhere, you know, Polster gets down to right, puts in a cross, and it just, you know, nice little back heel deflection from a calm, which, I mean, Bendick just didn't catch the movement. If he catches it, he probably can make that save, and you know, we go from there. But you fall behind that early on a long, grueling trip like that, it's got to take a lot out of you. And then before you knew it, 5 minutes later was another one, as he just streaked behind the defense, beat the just a perfectly timed ball. I mean, he just made a run. The ball was perfectly placed at the right time, and the center backs, you know, might on another night be a little bit sharper and be alert to that danger. But before you know it, you're down 2-0 and you're chasing the game. You're already tired, and it's just not going to be your night. And then it wasn't. And you know, they added another couple of goals, and you know, it looked almost like Orlando City could take a little bit of consolation out of the game late, and Rivas getting forward and gets stomped on by Matt Lampson, and there's no call at all. I mean, he's the last defender. Clearly, Rivas is going to win the race to that ball and just tuck it into an empty net, but there's just nothing. There's no, you know, first of all, you either have to call the foul on Lampson, or you have to book Rivas for diving, because it can't be.
Right.
It's got to be one or the other. It can't, you know, it can't be nothing in that situation.
Yeah, and it, like you said, incredibly frustrating, because, okay, we knew that, yeah, you're going to lose the game, but, you know, you see that happen, and you're immediately looking for the call and go, okay, hey, great, you know, maybe we can grab one back, at least help a little bit with goal differential, whatever. But the no call, I had friends over watching the game, and, I mean, everybody was just – you know, mouths were agape and eyes were wide because they couldn't figure out how we weren't getting a how we weren't getting the kick out of that. So that was incredibly frustrating. And I'm sure I know it was incredibly frustrating for Carlos.
For sure. Yeah. It was,
and then
you know you could see it clearly on the replay that he was stepped on and. Yep. And obviously having to be helped off the field, and obviously Orlando City had made its three substitutions, so I had to finish the game, adding insult to injury, with 10 men a couple of weeks after going up against Chicago with only 9 men. And it was tough. And Rivas, we feared it could be a pretty nasty injury. As it stands, he's being listed as day-to-day. I'd kind of be surprised if he dressed on Friday against Real Salt Lake, because it seems a little soon, but it's nice to know day to day is much better than being out a month or 6 weeks or whatever.
Yeah, and with the lack of offensive firepower that has been the sadly the norm a little bit recently, losing Carlos would not be helpful. We're gonna get Kyle back, and we're gonna talk about it a little later, but. I don't expect him to dress out for Friday, but he should. I would anticipate he'll be back the game after that.
All right, so it's really difficult to select a man of the match for a game like that, but who was your Orlando City man of the match?
Well, my man of the match, I'm going to say here, is different than the one that I voted in the online poll. I think everybody voted for Liquor Cabinet in that one, but yeah. Yeah, for me, no, it has to be Tommy Redding. He had some breakdowns just like everybody else did, but I also, he stood out on some plays that he had some good clearances, and I just felt that, he did a good job most of the night of being on the ball, staking out his territory. So, and I say that because as I'm watching the game, you're making the little notes in your head about everybody. And I remember saying to myself, that was a good one from Tommy. There's another good one. And it just kind of added up in my head. So I'm going with Redding.
Yeah. Tommy had a pretty good game overall, did make some mistakes, but I think he did more things right than most players. I thought also Antonio Nocerino had a really strong game. I think he completed about 95% of his passes, was very solid defensively, and really hustled all night. Was one of the few players that you could noticeably tell was busting his tail. And again, he's another one of those guys who's getting up there in age, but still played after playing 90 minutes in Seattle. So, kudos to him for having a great game like that. But I picked my man of the match was a guy who brought a spark in off the bench and as a real surprise, and that's Richie Larea. He came in and he was very active right from the get-go, and I thought that he brought some good things and some good energy to the team. And certainly the team was lacking energy being behind as badly as they were, but he was one of those guys that just came out and sort of was a little bit infectious. I think he got a couple other guys going once he came on, guys like Matias Perez Garcia, and I think I think he re-energized Carlos Rivas to some extent as well when he came on.
Well, it's hard to argue against that. It's nice to see the youngster developing and contributing. Especially since we haven't had Kyle there, it's you enjoy watching him. Be that motivating factor on the field. Be that spark plug. That whatever you want to call it. That just the bringing that energy and getting the other people around him to step up. And if we can have that from him off the bench, the rest of the year, that kind of that energy, especially when other legs are tired, that could be very helpful. Especially as the season grinds on and people are more tired overall.
Yeah, it was good game for Richie. I think he only had like 6 or 8 passes, but I don't think he had a single incomplete pass. It was really good, really good MLS debut for the youngster. And it's nice to see Orlando City get some minutes from a former first round draft pick. Okay, so we touched on it already, but just today as we record this, which is Tuesday, this will drop on Wednesday the 28th, but as we record this the night before, we heard today that Kyle Larin has been cleared by MLS to return to team activities, and that includes games. So I guess the question is, after sitting out 12 days, can he get on the field Friday, especially considering that Carlos Rivas is probably going to be unavailable?
I'm almost certain that he's going to see the field. Now, whether he starts or not, that's a different question. But, like we said, with the possibility of Carlos out, and the fact that, you know, Laren's going to be wanting to prove something. He's going to want to come out and kind of make up for the mistake that he made in outside of the stadium. So I think you're going to see him being very motivated, probably very team oriented. I think you're going to see a lot of hustle out of him. We've missed him for 12 days, but I don't know. I've got a fairly good feeling of him coming back from that. I think that he's the kind of guy that's going to take that experience and try and make himself better from it. And I honestly think that might help him, you know, when he does hit the field.
Yeah, I think Kyle will definitely play like he's got a chip on his shoulder and he's got something to prove. I think if you would have told me, you know, someone on Orlando City got a DUI, I might have guessed every single player before Kyle Laren. Like, if I didn't know who it was. You know, I mean, he just didn't seem like that kind of a personality. And I'm sure this is – I mean, it was a mistake. Yeah, it was a thing he shouldn't have done. I'm not – you know, no one is going to excuse that. And, you know, we've talked about it before. It's just – we have to look at this like he did something wrong. He made a mistake. He obviously didn't plan it, because anybody that would have planned to go out would have obviously tried to make some type of arrangements ahead of time. It just happened. It was one of those things. He exercised very poor judgment, and some people could have gotten hurt or worse. And but at the same time, I'm not one of these guys who are like, you know, advocating for we should just cut him immediately, you know, because number one, that's dumb. Then you got an asset you get nothing for, and you know, you're just cutting off your nose to spite your face. But the other thing is, I'm always a guy who thinks that if people make a mistake, you know, you need to try to give them a chance to redeem themselves, you know, until they become a problem and show that this is not something they're learning from. And you know, obviously I'm not going to extend that to crimes that are far more vicious and savage. But this is a crime. He's going to pay the price for it. He's going to pay whatever the penalties are that are handed down, and he's going to go through the legal system on that. He's obviously already going through the MLS system, and I think that he's a guy that will learn from this and he'll come out on top in the end.
Well, we know he won't be driving for a little while anyway, because when that happens, they take that license away. So. He won't be doing that. He's young. I mean, we forget. I mean, man's only 22 years old. And for anybody calling for their head, I mean, think back to when you were 22 years old, some of the stupid stuff that you did. Because I know I did.
Heck, I still do stupid stuff.
I was going to say did stupid stuff, you know, probably earlier today. But, you know, certainly when I was 22 years old. So, you know, people need to be a little bit more realistic. And you know, if you're calling for him to leave, like you said, okay, one, you're throwing away money. And, you know, while – you know, the main focus of this was, you know, he did the crime. He's going to have to pay for it, like you said. Mm-hmm. You know, ultimately, you know, what this podcast is about is Orlando City soccer. And what's good for Orlando City soccer is to try and allow Kyle to you know, learn and grow from this as a man and as a player, and hope that it ultimately helps him, mm-hmm. and by effect helps the team. I think he's the kind of guy that can take this and indeed make himself a better person from it, learn from it, and, you know, move forward. I mean, you know, he's going to be doing community service, you know, because of this, I'm sure. And, you know, when he gets out there and is doing that, meeting with the, you know, I'm anticipating some sort of, you know, meeting with the public and talking to young kids and whatnot about the dangers, you know, that may give him some perspective as well. So I think it's a horrible situation. You know, we all wish it wouldn't happen. We're glad that nobody was, you know, seriously hurt. And I think he'll make the most of it going forward.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see how he responds to it and how his teammates support him and if it ends up being something they can rally around or if it you know gets in his head and messes him up. Well, I mean, it could go either way, but we'll have to watch and see. And that's what we do here. We watch a lot of soccer. Yeah. Okay, so OCB, on the other hand, they just did not do what the Lions and the Pride did. They went out and they won their game. They went to Rochester, at which no team had won at Rochester this year except the Rhinos themselves. And OCB went in there, got a goal from Timbo. Would not have pegged a goal from Timbo. If there was a goal from Timbo on the bingo card for OCB, I probably would not have anticipated crossing that space off, you know, and getting my bingo. But, you know, a fantastic dribble drive by Pierre da Silva up the left side, made a nice move to get inside, and just put a ball across the six-yard box that anybody just had to touch, and Timbo just happened to be the guy to touch it. So Timbo gets his first goal for Orlando City B, and the Young Lions go on to defend very desperately over the course of the second half and win the game 1-0, becoming the first team to leave Rochester with a victory this season. So a nice one for Anthony Pulis, and it's good to see. You know, we've seen OCB, you know, drop points that we probably thought they shouldn't have dropped, and then they go up and they get three that we didn't expect them to get. So that's a nice recovery, and hopefully they can come home and play Cincinnati and get some points this weekend after Cincinnati's going to have to play a U.S. Open Cup game in the midweek.
T-I-M-B-O and Timbo is his name. Oh, I mean, come on. How did you not see that coming on the bingo card? Timbo, bingo. It just works. No, good for him. I thought that Da Silva was fantastic all game, you know, creating chances, actually making some guys look silly. I mean, he went around on that goal that you're talking about. I mean, he went around two or three guys just to get the cross off. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he looked really good all night. The defense, I mean, they did a great job of defending. But even then, I mean, later on, I mean, Dequa had that shot that hit the crossbar in the 43rd, you know, minute. So it wasn't like they'd given up completely. Now, right. They did park the bus later.
Yeah. No, Dequa had a very good opportunity. It was funny because he was in deep and he was really desperately looking for someone to cross the ball into, and he couldn't find a path to put the ball into a teammate. So he just, you know, turned and just slammed it at the goal and just was inches from scoring from a really severe angle. Hit the crossbar and stayed out. And the crossbar might still be shaking up there hard as he hit it. But anyway, yeah, big win for OCB. It's good. You know, you're going to have a tired Cincinnati team coming in. They're going to have to throw everything they can at the Chicago Fire this week in the U.S. Open Cup. And, you know, hopefully they'll come in a little bit worn down, and maybe Orlando City B can get a win like they did in Cincinnati. So it would be a nice feather in their cap to get that one. And, you know, I have to say, as the founder and managing editor of the Mainland, I do want to just reach out to every listener out there and just say that I'm here for you. I'm here for you. I apologize for Dave singing. I'm hoping it will never happen again. But
you're the one that brought up bingo, dang it.
Yeah, but you didn't hear me singing. That's not something I did. All right. So I think we've talked about all of the teams and all of the games. And now it's time to look ahead to a few other things before we get to this week's guest. One of those things is that the Gold Cup 23-man rosters came out this week, Dave. And there was no Joe Bendick. There was no Jonathan Spector. In addition, Kyle Larin was left off. We kind of expected that in light of what was going on. But also Will Johnson was not on Canada's team. So Orlando City gets to keep all of its players during the Gold Cup, although there wasn't going to be a lot of games while the Gold Cup was going on, but there were going to be a few. So now Orlando City gets to keep its full strength by not giving up Bendick, Spector, Johnson, or Larin. And although after the group stage, you know, each team has the opportunity to swap six players from the 40-man roster in for players who may be injured or under a yellow card suspension or that kind of thing. So there's still a chance those guys could get caps in the Gold Cup, but it doesn't look like any of those four are going to participate. If Canada gets through, I think Laren has the best chance of the four to get a call up.
Yeah, you know, it was pretty obvious with everything that happened with Kyle that, you know, he wasn't going to get the call, you know, for the initial for the 23-man roster. Like you said, if they get through the group stage, they can, you know, pick up get six, you know, swap out six guys, you know, depending on, you know, what they do, that would be the one that, you know, you would expect. I don't. Given the position, how deep they are, switching to the U.S., how deep they are on center backs, I don't think that Spector would see any action. We are pretty deep on goalie as well, so I'm not expecting Joe. Not that I don't think that either of them are as good or better as the people that did make the squad, but, you know, I'm simply going to – I'm going to feel momentarily bad that they didn't get the call up, and then feel really good that they get to play for club if they don't get to play for country, because that's just going to help. That's going to help Orlando City having you know, I mean, Bendik and Spector are quite a bit of the defensive power right now for Orlando City, and then you know, with Kyle coming back, if we were not missing him again, which we, you know, we've been missing him now for, you know, a little bit. And of course, Will Johnson being, you know, the heart of that, the backside of the midfield. So, it's like I said, I feel momentarily bad for them as individuals, but I feel really good for the team, that it kind of played out that way for us.
Yeah, I would have to say, in my opinion, that Spector might be the least expendable player on Orlando City right now. So, you know, Bendik, as good as he is, I think Johnson may actually also be just as much of a guy who's not expendable. And so we need to have those guys around, especially, you know, I think Bendik's done a good job, and I think there's some. I know that I've seen some concerns about, well, people don't want to see Josh Saunders because he played them the one game and didn't have a great game. But, I mean, obviously he's been around a while, and he's a guy who, if he's playing more regularly, he's going to be okay. So,
yeah,
I think. And of course, I'm also pretty, you know, I'm pretty confident that Earl Edwards Jr. could do a good job for Orlando City. I don't think his distribution skills are quite there, but I think he's, as a shot stopper, I think he's pretty solid. So I'm okay with Orlando City's goalkeeper depth, but I don't think you can lose a Spector. I think you could lose Johnson's skills, but I don't think you can lose his leadership. I think his leadership is very important to this team. So anyway, we don't have to lose any of that. We got our cake and we eat it too. So there you go. Okay, before we get to our guests, one more thing I want to talk about is the big doubleheader on Saturday. It's the first of two Pride OCB doubleheaders, Dave. What do you think of this idea?
I like it because it's if you're giving people more for their money kind of thing, you know. So and it's, you want to raise the awareness, you want to, you know, get the fans out. I don't see anything wrong with it. I think it's a good idea, and you know, the only thing I don't like is, you know, not being, you know, being 4 hours away and having to work. So
yeah, and then, you know, the Pride have to play at 5, which is still going to be pretty hot, and then the OCB will play at 8:30. Here's what I'm thinking. We haven't had a lightning delay yet this season, so I'm thinking this is probably the week to have it, because you know, it's going to screw everything up when you have two games going on. That would be, you know, just our luck, but hopefully that won't happen, and we'll get both games in, and both will be victorious. Hopefully that'd be really great. And I think the other thing too that I wanted to mention, we don't have to get too deep into it, but the cool thing is Orlando City next year, for people that are renewing their season tickets, you get OCB season tickets as part of that. So that's a pretty cool thing to try to get a few more people in the seats to see what is actually – I'm really surprised that with the B team in town – I know a lot of people aren't into necessarily minor league sports or the reserves or however they perceive this. But, you know, there are USL fans in this town, and I'm a little bit surprised that attendance hasn't been higher since they moved back to Orlando, just because these guys are the future of Orlando City, and there's some pretty exciting young players to go look at.
And they're actually really – I mean, I usually watch, you know, on the YouTubes, yeah. And they're oftentimes very fun to watch. You know, like you said, there's some guys, you know, out there. You know, we mentioned Pierre de Silva earlier, and you know, the excitement and the creativity he brings. And, of course, Earl Edwards is, you know, probably one of the better goalies in USL. I think he's doing a fantastic job.
Richie Larea's been having a great year down yep. there, and he's been fun to watch. Albert Dequa's been fun to watch. Haji Berry is a guy who, you know, a lot of people have seen his name on the team sheet, but he hasn't been getting in games, so they don't really know much about him. But he's been exciting, and I think there's quite a bit to be excited about with OCB, and I'd really like to see people going to see it. I know it's a lot when you're already shelling out for Orlando City MLS tickets to go, but you know, OCB tickets are not that expensive either. So, you know, it's, you know, just go to Starbucks once or twice less a week and go see OCB play.
Absolutely. And like I said, they are fun to watch. And you know, anytime you can get into the Orlando City Stadium to watch any kind of soccer match, that's going to be a fun time, mm-hmm. especially if it's watching, like I said, those young, the future of Orlando City soccer is those guys there. So, you know, once again, my only complaint is I'm 4 hours away.
So if there's 18,000 season ticket holders and let's say only 1,500 of them decide to take up the OCB, you know, go see the OCB games on any given game day, that's going to more than double the attendance of the OCB games what they're drawing now. So it's really a big help. So plus, you know, the team is going to sell more merchandise. They're going to sell more mm-hmm. concessions. They're going to be able to make some more money that way. So I think it's a good move. I think that if people that want the USL tickets and don't want to shell out for MLS season tickets can still do that. But you know, now you're giving the MLS people a little bit more bang for their buck, which is always a good thing because people always complain about how they're getting ripped off by these teams. But it's just what pro sports is. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, try being a NASCAR fan if you think this is bad. So I think that wraps up a lot of topics from this past week. We're going to start to look ahead. And, of course, Orlando City visits Real Salt Lake for the second time in 3 years. Coming up this Friday night. The first time they went out there was a 4th of July match in 2015 where Kaká got sent off, of all people. Neither team has gotten the upper hand in this series. A pair of games against each other and a pair of draws. And we'll see if anybody can get the upper hand. And a little bit earlier, I spoke with Real Salt Lake blogger Matt Montgomery. He's the editor over at RSL Soapbox, the SB Nation blog that covers Real Salt Lake and Real Monarchs. And, you know, why don't we get to that interview? Actually, it wasn't so much of an interview as a conversation. We'll get to that right after this. All right, joining us this week on the Mainland Podcast is Matthew Montgomery, the editor of RSL Soapbox. That is the SB Nation website that covers all things Real Salt Lake. Matt, how's it going?
Yeah, things are a little mixed here in Salt Lake City with Real Salt Lake, but personally, things are going just fine. So,
outstanding.
Can't ask for more than that.
That's good. I was, probably not close by recently, but I recently just took a trip to visit my in-laws in Las Vegas, Nevada. So I was at least in the general vicinity of you in the recent past, and it was really, really hot out that way.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't get quite that hot in Salt Lake. We're sitting around 100 degrees the last few days, so it's miserable, but it could be more miserable, I guess.
Yeah, I think it was 118 when we were trying to take off, and the pilot had to delay fueling the plane till the last possible second to be safe. So that was fun. That was a new experience for me. So I wanted to just start out by asking you, obviously it's not gone well for Real Salt Lake this year with the coaching change. We went through that last year here in Orlando. Just give me your perspective on the season so far for RSL and what sort of you guys have endured to this point.
Yeah, you know, saying it's been unusual, I think, is an understatement for us. Obviously, and we're obviously going to refer back to Jason Kreis here because of the importance he has to Real Salt Lake, and that continues, and no one's surprised by that. But we had, under him, we had a long period of consistency, and even when we weren't always winning, we looked like Real Salt Lake. And the issue we've seen across all of 2017, I'd argue, is just not looking particularly like Real Salt Lake. And that's not to say that our identity couldn't change and shouldn't change and doesn't change over time, because those things are inevitable. But we were always a side under Jason Kreis that had a lot of identity. And under Jeff Cassar at the beginning of the year, our identity had continued to fade. And under Mike Petke, we are, I think, and maybe I'm being overly optimistic here, starting to establish a new identity. Obviously, that came with some very tricky, rough transitions. We conceded, 9-10 goals in Texas over two games. We scored one. it wasn't good. We continue to be bad on the road. We went to Sacramento Republic, a USL team, and lost, 4-1, 5-1? They all kind of blend together now. and so we're in this awkward position of knowing that we are starting to establish an identity and still sometimes losing by significant margins week in, week out.
Well, I want to point out that when I laugh, I'm not laughing at you. I can commiserate as a fan of a team that went to Houston and lost 4-0 and also lost a U.S. Open Cup match 3-1, although that was at home to an NASL team.
Yeah, sometimes when you're having a rough season, like, those things just sort of happen. And you know, it's hard to look too much into these lower league matches just because they're real wild cards for every MLS team when they run up against those. So it's a tricky situation, I guess. But it's nice to know other people are in the same boat every now and again.
Yeah, I meant to look this up, but I didn't get a chance. Did Jason Kreis come to Salt Lake City with New York City FC the year that he was there?
Yes, he did.
Okay, so this will not be his first trip back to Real Salt Lake.
No, this will be his second.
I see. And so obviously you had the coaching change there. What did you think of the timing of that? And I mean, it seemed to me, like, as an outsider, that, you know, this is something that was probably being considered earlier, so why not pull the trigger in the off season when you can allow the coach to build his team a little bit?
Yeah, that's the question of the day, right? Or of the last 3 months for Real Salt Lake. So why not do this earlier, and is it worth doing it now? I do think it was worth doing it when we did. But at the same time, that timing was really, really unusual. And I think you're right. We would have benefited from doing it earlier and giving Mike Petke a chance to build his side. I think, I don't know if that's down to Deloy Hansen and Craig Weibel, whether it's just one of them playing a role there. Sometimes ownership gets a little maybe over-involved, and people like to think that Deloy Hansen is unique that way, but I think we do see that in basically every sport and every franchise. Sometimes you have owners that get involved, and sometimes, like, every owner will sometimes, I think, get more involved than they need to. Unless, say, it's Dan Kroenke at Colorado Rapids never being involved,
I tried to look up. It's funny because I try to see as many MLS games as I can, but I will have to cop to not being able to see much of RSL this year. And the one thing that is just glaring when you look at the standings is the minus 20 goal differential to me. That is, it just leaps right off the page. What is it about this year's team? I mean, obviously scoring goals is hard in you know basically any year unless you've got like a David Villa. What is it about the defense that has been so porous this year?
So the funny thing about that number is I think at home we've been fairly average as far as MLS teams go. And maybe we've lost a couple that we should have won, and you know there's some hard feelings around that. But what we're looking with that negative 20, I think, is four or five really, really terrible away games. Because when you lose by five goals in Houston and Dallas and every other place we've managed to do something awful like that, those really add up quickly. So I try not to focus too much on that negative 20, mm-hmm. Just because we already know that those matches have been problems. And I am hopeful and probably, like, again, way too optimistic in saying that if the general trend continues to be positive, we stop losing those terrible matches, then I'm not going to worry too much because there's no chance we recover 20 goals over the season. Even if we win every game, you know, at best we'd end up with like an equal goal differential. It's not looking good for us in that regard.
Yeah, if you got to even over the course of the second half of the season, that would be a pretty amazing second half of the season.
Oh, that would be unreal. That would probably be the best turnaround since last year when Seattle did the same basic thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the games I did see was the you're probably not going to want to be reminded of this, was the trip you guys had to Minnesota. And I just don't know if that was – those types of mistakes are representative of what the team has done this year because, I mean, you had the absolute howler by Raimondo. You had a defensive giveaway that was essentially giving the other team a layup and just really asleep at the switch type defending in that game.
Yeah, I'd say for a pretty good stretch of games, that was typical of us. And that's the thing that really has perplexed everybody is obviously under Jeff Kassar, we weren't great, but we weren't that bad. Mike Petke is clearly a better coach than those games show. So there are things, and you know, some people say it's locker room, some people say it's ownership, some people say it's down to just not having the right mix in the squad. You'll get all sorts of opinions on that. But it's tough to reason out like why that's happened. Because there are better players than this, I think. obviously, we went through some injury spells like most MLS teams will. There were a couple games where we weren't able to fill a bench. Not great by any means. And we were down to our reserves on center backs. And sure, that's not ideal. The issue, I think, is that when we've been playing with center backs that aren't reserves and you know these players that you'd expect to do better, Nick Raimondo, for example, you'd expect them to do better and they weren't. So it felt like something was just really off. I do think that was typical for a period, and it's probably still typical of us on the road. I think the last few games, our loss in San Jose was not nearly that bad. Our wins at home have seen us actually look pretty competent. It's hard to say whether that's typical at home or on the road, but I definitely lean toward that being something on the road that we just haven't dealt with properly.
Now, what has Mike Petke done to the team since he's come in? Has he changed shape? Has he brought some personnel off the bench that were, you know, that maybe weren't getting the minutes under Kassar? I mean, what changes has he made?
So under Kassar, I don't think we saw quite enough time this season to really understand where he was going with what players he wanted to play and which he didn't. But what we have seen is Mike Petke being completely willing to change the formation before the game. And that's unusual for Real Salt Lake because under Jason Kreis and under Jeff Kassar, we played typically one formation in the season. And under Jason Kreis from 2008 to 2013, that was the diamond. Jeff Kassar continued that in 2014 and eventually went toward that 4-3-3 looking thing under Kassar in 15 and 16 that sometimes worked and sometimes didn't. So that's the big difference for me, is that Pecky will play a 4-1-4-1, and maybe it works and maybe it doesn't. But he's doing something different. He'll play a 4-4-2, and he'll try a diamond-like thing, and he'll play a 4-3-3. And it's unusual here, and I think we're still all trying to figure out exactly what that means for us as a club, and like how as fans we feel about that sort of thing.
Yeah, the interesting thing to me is that Rio Tinto is a tough place for anybody to play. Obviously, you get that. You know, the whole MLS thing where it's hard to win on the road anyway, but then you go to Rio Tinto, which is got a great atmosphere. You've got, you're playing at a little bit of altitude. What are the kinds of unique challenges that visiting teams have when they come into Salt Lake City?
Yeah, for a team that plays at sea level, going up to, 4,800 feet does present a challenge later in the game. Our fan base is pretty raucous, but it hasn't been quite the same in the last few matches at home. And even though we're starting to win, there's still like visible anger pretty consistently. If we get back to what we do, then you combine the altitude and the fans, but it's also being proactive at home. And I know I keep referencing Jason Kreis. I think maybe I'm just jealous that he's in Orlando and not in Salt Lake. But it's definitely about being proactive. I think Mike Pecky is of that mindset, that he wants his teams to push and to play a high line and try to control the game. So I think that combined with altitude and things like that does make a difference.
Well, playing a high line might work out pretty well this week for Real Salt Lake, as Carlos Rivas was injured at Chicago the other day, and he got stomped on by Matt Lampson, and there wasn't any foul or a yellow card for diving, so I'm not really sure what the referee thought was happening on the play, but he's day-to-day. I'm not sure he's going to make that team and that game, and I think that he's a guy who likes to exploit that high line. But Orlando may be getting Kyle Larin back, as he was cleared by the MLS just this morning. So what do you see, Matt, as the key matchup of this Friday's game, and what do you think is going to happen when the two teams kick off?
The key for us, and maybe it's not a matchup so much as one player for us that'll make a difference, and that's having Kyle Beckerman back, who was suspended for yellow card accumulation. So I think getting him back in there sets us up with a midfield that actually can function. And we've seen over and over that without him, our midfield just kind of falls apart. So the matchup, I guess, is whoever happens to be in the midfield, whether that's Will Johnson and Louis Gill or who have you, up against Kyle Beckerman, will I don't know, it'll be interesting. But I'm going to say, I'm really excited to see some of these players back, to see where they are in their careers. Yeah. Because a player like Gill could have been really exciting here.
Yeah, I wanted to – I was going to actually talk to you about Gill a little bit. But first, I want to ask you, is it the least surprising thing about RSL this year that Kyle Beckerman got a yellow card suspension?
Yeah, I was actually – I thought it might have happened sooner than the halfway point. So, it's definitely not surprising. He always gets one of those a year. So,
So Gil, I think you might be more excited about seeing him than many Orlando City fans. I don't think that Orlando City fans have quite warmed up to Luis Gil yet. I think he's a player that has come into the league and not – I don't think he's playing at his, the level he's capable of yet, and I think a lot of that is the fact that he wasn't getting consistent minutes in Liga MX. So it's one of those cases where a guy comes in, he's new, he's got, you know, he's got kind of an unusual haircut, and he's an easy target because he's not playing at the level that people would like to see him playing at. But what is it? What can you tell our fans about his qualities, you know, and the things that maybe they should be excited about?
So let me say this. I'm excited to see Louis Skild, but I'm not particularly worried. And that's not because I've been watching with Orlando, but just knowing how he has played historically when he was with Real Salt Lake, he's not a player that will actively impress you week in, week out. He will have flashes of really great stuff, and then he'll historically he just kind of faded away within a game, mm-hmm. and maybe he'll step back up at some point and really get things going. But he was a confusing player here, and that's part of why I'm excited to see where he is now, is because it felt like he had a lot of untapped potential all the time. And just never was able to really free that up. So really, I think Real Salt Lake fans would understand the frustration, because for so long, and part of that is bringing a player in when he's 16 and, mm-hmm. and having that hype around him. But for so long, we were expecting something that never really came. We thought he'd be the Javier Morales replacement, but he never was. He turned into more, and ironically, of a Will Johnson replacement. Just kind of a connective guy in the midfield mm-hmm. who would occasionally get forward and score a good goal. So it's I get it. He is one of the more frustrating players I think Real Salt Lake has had that's played regular minutes.
I think people saw that, you know, the Liga MX thing and the fact that he had his best season in his last year with Jason Christ, and they got a little bit of excited. And like you said, I think he's shown some flashes. He definitely helped set up the tying goal at Seattle last week, and then he just kind of, like you said, he kind of disappears in the game at times. You just don't notice that he's out there, but he seems to be working hard, but just doesn't seem to be accomplishing a whole lot. And I just wonder how much of it is, you know, rust from not playing, how much of it is that he's still learning his teammates to some extent. I know that Antonio Nocerino was a pretty popular punching bag for our fans when he came over from Italy and was not in game fitness. And now he's kind of a, you know, one of the more respected guys on the team. So I didn't know if Louis Gill was one of the guys that was capable of becoming that.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, on one hand, I hope he can. I just hope he doesn't find that potential on Friday.
Well, if Jason Christ goes with a first-choice lineup, Gil will be on the bench. You would likely see a midfield of Kaká, Will Johnson, Christian Aguita, and Antonio Nocerino. And that could be a diamond, or he could actually play Kaká up top again. With maybe Kyle Lahren this time if Rivas can't play. Rivas and Kaká were the forwards at Chicago, which didn't actually work out all that well. But he's also played a lot of flat 4-4-2 this year and played Matias Perez-Garcia on the right side. And he's also played some Giles Barnes at times as well. But I think we'll see the diamond, and I think we'll see Barnes up top with Lahren, which isn't ideal because they're both sort of the same type of striker. And it's not a fully operational Orlando City at the moment with Rivas out. And I'm just assuming that Lahren will get enough training sessions in to be in the lineup. But that's not a given by any stretch after he's not been allowed to participate in any team activities for about the last 12 days. So we'll have to see what happens. But looking forward to the matchup. I think it's always... there's a lot of intrigue in this one, even though the teams don't see each other very often because of the ties between, you know, Jason Christ and Louis Gill and Will Johnson. And, you know, of course, the two teams have drawn the two times they've played so far. So no one's yet gotten the upper hand. But I'm very, very interested to see what happens on Friday.
Yeah, you and me both. I hope you're enjoying being, for the time, the new RSL East after New York City.
Yeah, well, it started off very, very well for us, but the last well, we didn't get our first win in May until the last game of May, and we don't have a win in June, so this would be our last opportunity to do that. So it has been a bit of a roller coaster. I think some teams have figured out what Jason Christ was doing, and that's kind of hindered the team of late. I also think Carlos Rivas has been sort of figured out by the opposition to some extent, and he's not running rampant like he was early in the season. So he needs to take that next step as a player and develop and add things to his game. And also, I think a lot of teams have figured out that if you crowd Kyle Larin, and you know, there's not a whole lot of other players on Orlando City that are going to be dangerous in the box. So that's also hindered Orlando City this year. It's weird because we scored the third most amount of goals in MLS last year, added, you know, pieces that should make the offense better, but we've scored far fewer goals this year. So it's been a kind of a strange up and down season. But I think two teams that really need a win are going to play on Friday night. And, you know, I think if history has taught us anything, it's that it's going to be a draw.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
So anyway, Matt Montgomery, the editor of RSL Soapbox, thanks so much for being with us, and we enjoyed chatting with you as always, and we'll look forward to hearing from you again down the road sometime.
Hey, well, thanks for having me.
All right, well, we're going to just about put a big bow on this 92nd edition of the Mainland Podcast. I want to thank Matt Montgomery of RSL Soapbox for stopping by. It was good to talk to him, and you know, he's a very passionate fan, but very soft-spoken. He's intelligent, and he knows a lot about soccer, and he knows a lot about Real Salt Lake, and it was good to hear his thoughts on Luis Gil and you know, the return of Jason Christ and that kind of thing. I like that he's interested to see Will Johnson and Luis Gil return to Rio Tinto to play, and I'm looking forward to that as well. So we'll find out what happens on Friday night, Dave.
Yeah, we will, and it's it'll be nice to have a game where we've actually had, you know, a few days more rest than we have recently. So maybe that'll bode well, especially since, you know, Rio Tinto is a little bit elevation challenge for those of us that live in the Sunshine State. Quite a bit higher up there. Oxygen's not quite as much, and you know, I'm sure that they're gonna, you know, take that into account, you know, for the travel schedule and whatnot. But you know, with tired legs, if you've got, you know, not a lot of oxygen coming in, that can be a challenge.
Yeah, I was telling Matt at Las Vegas, it's about 2,900 feet elevation, and I walked around the block, and there's a lot of hills and stuff, and I was pretty winded. Now, I'm not in great shape, so I could have got winded anyway, but that's going from sea level to 2,900 feet. I can't imagine going to 4,000. That's almost double. So that's going to wear on their lungs, especially in the second half of the game. Mm-hmm. We do have a question, Dave, in our Ask the Mainland podcast. You can do that. You can hit us up at our Twitter feed, which is @TheMainland, and just use the hashtag AskTMLPC. And we will answer any question you throw at us, because we are very knowledgeable about all topics, as you know. Tanner Rosalino wanted to know our feelings on Kyle Larin's DUI. I think we kind of covered this already, but just to – Tanner, thanks for the question. We definitely want to acknowledge your question and just, you know, not to give you short shrift because we talked about it earlier. But, yeah, I think, again – a mistake by a young person that's been, you know, the same mistake that's been made by young people all over, not only this country, but countries all over the world, mm-hmm. and not just young people. I mean, it's, you know, older people who should know better, you know, and who don't think they're indestructible and immortal, like, you know, the young tend to think, have done this many, many times. And I have actual friends who have gotten multiple DUI arrests, and it's inexplicable. But you don't stop liking the person because they did something stupid or something, you know, made a bad choice. You have to support them. You have to you know, hope they correct their behavior and learn from what they've done. And you know, some, you know, most do, some, a few don't, you know, and some people just don't really think all that much sometimes when they are out having a good time. And that's a shame. But, I mean, that is a side effect of going out and having a good time.
Yeah, and like we said, he's gonna have to go through the, or he's going through the MLS program. He's gonna have to go through, you know, state of Florida or whatever they want to do to him. And so he's going to be paying for this. Have, you know, no doubt, those who are not happy about it. And that's ultimately, at the end of the day, I think it'll be something that he'll take, he'll learn from, and as I said earlier, I think he'll use it to become a better person, a better man, and a better player.
Yeah, and in fact, we can't discount the fact there's probably going to be some internal things that we never hear about, that you know, teams have fines and things like that for this type of behavior. So, you know, different coaches and different GMs and different organizations have different ways of dealing with this kind of stuff. And sometimes it's very hush hush and under the radar. But yeah, it will be addressed in on many levels, Tanner. So, you know, if Kyle never does this again, then I guess he's learned from it, and we all move on. Thank God nobody was hurt, and thank God nobody was killed, and no property was really damaged or anything like that. So, you know, we all dodged a bullet, I think, and you know, hopefully we can all put this behind us and never speak of it again, because he's hopefully going to turn everything around.
Absolutely.
All right, Dave. So we're not getting out of here. By the way, you can not only send us a question at Twitter with the hashtag AskTMLPC. You can also email your questions to us at themainland@gmail.com. So please hit us up with whatever you want to know about. I mean, where, you know, who has the best pizza in Tallahassee? Dave could probably tell you that.
And I can tell you that, but I'm not going to tell you that unless you ask.
That's right. You have to ask. You know, where should you go on your honeymoon? That we can handle that. We can tell you exactly what to do. You know, we're not just soccer experts here at the
We're experts in everything.
That's right. We know it all. So Dave, before we get out of here, we obviously have got to talk a little bit about Real Salt Lake, and you know, this is a team I haven't seen them much this year. I've seen them a couple of times, and I don't even think full games either time, but you know, they're going to be the way they always are at home, very difficult to break down, very gritty. They're not going to be sieve-like they have been on the road. Defensively, you're going to probably see Nick Raimondo stop a shot that you'd think he has no business stopping at some point. What is your key matchup for the game, and what do you expect as a final score?
So my key matchup for the game is going to be the top part of the diamond, and how, if they can, you know, break through, get some balls in for the strikers to have some opportunities. I Kyle Beckerman's going to be back, and I feel that our defense is going to, you know, step back up to the plate, having, you know, had a little bit of a rest. And I feel good, of course, with Johnson on the, you know, the back end of the diamond. So I think it's really going to depend on who's up top. Is it MPG? Is it Kaká? Who up there is going to make those opportunities to allow a newly back Kyle Larin to hopefully get a goal? So that's my key matchup. I think that it's going to end up being a draw. I think Orlando City gets a goal early, probably from Larin, just because he's going to want it so bad, and then they'll end up later in the second half giving up the equalizer, just as the you know, being on the road again and being tired and being at elevation, you know, takes its toll later in the game.
Yeah, I think for me the key matchup is the two most dynamic attacking players on the field for Orlando City, which would be Larin, assuming he plays, and Kaká. Can they bounce back? Kaká from a pretty poor performance at Chicago, and Larin from, you know, his suspension. I mean, if those two guys can bounce back and be, you know, play very determined soccer and you know, bring a high energy level and just refuse to get stopped like they, you know, we've seen at times from them, I think that's the key to the game for me. Is like, those two have to be the guys that lead the line and beat their man. And whether that's Kaká getting past Beckerman and forcing the, you know, one of Beckerman's patented studs up challenges, or or if it's Larin, you know, just going over top of a center back on a cross, a nice cross from Sutter or Toya, you know, whatever the case may be. I think those are that's what I'm looking for in this game. I kind of think also, like I said, some teams you just tend to draw against. I mean, you tend to draw against San Jose. You tend to draw against RSL. I think it's going to be a 2-2 draw.
Okay, there you have it.
Yep. So there we go. So we'll see. It would be unfortunate because it would mean a June without a victory. But, you know, a point from the road is nothing to sneeze at, particularly with Orlando City's road record this year. So, and a 2-2 draw on the road, even against an RSL team that has struggled this year, is better than a 4-0 loss.
Well, and we were both wrong on that 4-0 loss. So.
Oh, yes, we were.
So maybe we're wrong this time, and Orlando City gets the win.
That would be a very nice, very nice thing. And they should do it. They should do it for Jason Kreis, who used to coach there. So that would be good. So that will just about wrap up episode number 92 of the Mainland Podcast. Definitely want to thank Matt Montgomery of RSL Soapbox again for being with us. Very knowledgeable guy. I think it was his third time on our show. He usually is on in July. He was on in July of 2015 to preview the first meeting between the two teams. He came on again last July to talk about Jason Kreis, as we had both Matt and we had Raf from New York City blog to give us the lowdown on Jason Kreis from the perspectives of his two previous teams, and now Matt came back for this, so that's great. It's always nice to talk to Matt. I always enjoy those conversations, and I'm sure we'll talk to him again in the future. Please read our stuff at themainland.com. We definitely enjoy getting your comments to the stories. You can leave your comments and feedback on the bottom of any story you read on the site. It's one of the great things about SB Nation's blogs. Please, if you go to iTunes and please give us a rating and let us know how we're doing, because that could potentially move us up in the rankings and expose our show to other people and give us more listeners, and that'd be really awesome for us. And it's been growing and growing since we started this thing, and we would like to see that continue. Please follow us on Twitter at The Mainland. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/TheMainland. And that's basically all the ways you can consume our product. It's one thing that we like is our product to be consumed here at The Mainland. But that'll do it for episode 92. On behalf of Tallahassee Dave Rowe, I am Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com, signing off by saying, Go City!